Welcome to the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast, the show for anyone wanting to be on the cutting edge of SaaS tech sales. We provide the tools you need to take advantage of the rapidly changing sales environment. We bring you the leading experts on the front lines of SaaS sales and distill down our famous masterclasses into bite-sized practical tips. Your hosts will be Ash Ali and Matt Milligan. And on this podcast, we'll be helping you transform your ability to sell more so you can smash your targets.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast. We have an amazing schedule of guests coming up for this quarter, and I'm delighted to be joined today by a fantastic sales leader, someone who I've got to know personally through Pavilion in the London chapter. My guest today is Tom Carsley. Tom is leading the revenue organization at Hook, which is a really exciting, fast growth startup in the customer success space. Tom, welcome onto the show and fantastic to have you here.
Yeah, nice to be here as well. Looking forward to our conversation.
Tom, I always like to kickstart the conversation on these episodes just by really giving the audience a bit of an understanding of the journey of each of the leaders that come on the show. I mean, it'd be great if you could share a bit more flavor and color around what your journey into sales leadership has looked like so far. And then obviously how, you know, you've ended up with the new journey at Hook.
Sure. The highlights reel version. I haven't done this for a long while. So I was in pre-sales for about 6 or 7 years. I think every pre-sales person knows that they're a better sales rep than their sales rep. They just don't want to carry the risk. I was happy to. I made the jump across into sales and worked for a number of startups and actually kept getting promoted into leadership. And two things from that. One is I wasn't ready for it. In terms of, I didn't understand what leadership was. I was just basically the best reps who got promoted. The second thing was I kept seeing all the pipeline I'd built being closed by reps I hired, and they were clearing their mortgages and I still had one. So I worked out I didn't want to go into leadership at that stage in my career and went off to be a rep actually at Oracle for 6 or 7 years and then came out and then went back into leadership later on in life. The two things that came out of that, one is don't jump into leadership too early. Your earning potential goes down. The second thing I learned actually going through the sales process was I started off in SMB sales and then went to commercial, then enterprise, and kept thinking I needed to do bigger deals with bigger companies because that's what the best sales reps do. And although I could do it and I did some pretty big deals, I've got to say I absolutely hated it. And if I could talk to my former self, I would say, Tom, you should have worked out what is your ideal deal structure, ideal deal length, deal size, personas, is it evangelical, is it fulfillment, and so on and so forth, and then start to, you know, get better at that. Your earnings potential goes up, your enjoyment goes up, and so on and so forth. So yeah, now I find myself here at Hook. We're a small UK startup, taking seed funding from Lightspeed and really enjoying the challenge of taking advantage of the opportunity that's in front of us.
That'll be a really interesting topic for us to dive into, I think, Tom, because obviously you've been on this journey many times throughout your career, making that transition from kind of early traction into a predictable, repeatable model for selling. Give us a bit of a sense, if you will, of where is the business at in terms of level of traction as you joined? And like, obviously, great news with the seed raise, but where's the business at? What are you stepping into?
When I joined, they'd got a few customers. We were selling primarily to the customer success persona, and we were selling them, you know, obviously the ability to reduce churn, increase expansions, and do that in a data-led way. When I thought about the problem that the CS people were facing, it didn't feel like it was business critical to them. And their view on the world was more, I still need to go faster. It was a real Henry Ford, you know. So we pivoted. The product strategy and the direction has continued, but we are part of the revenue stack. We're not part of this separate CS stack that's kind of developed in the industry. And therefore, we're now very relevant to, you know, RevOps, CFOs and CROs. So, you know, what we've done over the last 5 or 6 months is to, you know, pivot the website, the messaging and our approach. And guess what? In the current climate, net dollar retention, expansions, churn, predictability, you know, those are the conversations which CROs, CFOs and RevOps are having every day. And CS is part of that conversation, but is not necessarily the driving force. If you had a racy model, I would say that CS is being consulted in that conversation because it's so revenue focused.
That's fascinating. Really, really interesting. So it sounds like you've just done a subtle kind of reposition in terms of your messaging and who you're going after ultimately. And yeah, I mean, as you said, the current market climate, you know, we're recording this in December of 2022, tough times, right? And I think the retention metrics that you spoke about are front and center for pretty much all senior revenue leadership in most of the organizations I'm speaking with anyway.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, Munya, who you might know well, Munya Hutto, he has this whole thing, which is don't sell the product, sell the change. And change is tough, like super tough, especially when, you know, there's loads of reasons to not change. You know, you'll discount the size of the problem. You'll discount your ability to change. You'll discount the ability of your colleagues to change with you. You'll discount the willingness of your executives to get involved. You end up coming up with all of these reasons why you shouldn't change. But if you can get somebody or you've got messaging that has somebody realize that doing nothing is the worst possible decision they could make, then you overcome your number one competitor, which is do nothing. And so, yeah, the work we did was, we haven't changed the product. We haven't changed the UI or how it's packaged or anything. We just found the people who are likely to come to the conclusion that doing nothing is the worst. And the fact is, many of them have already done it. When they're looking at their churn and expansion numbers, they've already said, we need to change. This is untenable. Growth at all costs is not the way forward anymore. And so we're now dealing with an audience of people that's in flux. You cannot do anything in business without spending money.
That's a great quote and a great line to use in sales conversations, right? I mean, I must reflect on the warning signs were obviously there for quite some time, but it does feel quite remarkable how quickly the shift has happened. You know, I was having a conversation with a founder the other day where, you know, that growth at all cost mindset was kind of still around and about in kind of August, September time, where VCs were kind of pressurizing us to, you know, hire more, hire quicker. And then, you know, fast forward to November, December time. And we've obviously all seen the layoffs that are happening across the sector.
If you think about it, SaaS is still young. You know, it's only been around for a few years. You know, most certainly in the US now, you're certainly getting more VCs who understand SaaS. They're not just finance people. That's not necessarily the case in other parts of the world. But, you know, the view was if you sign somebody up, there's revenue and we could grow. So just keep signing people up. And I remember 8-9 years ago, maybe a bit longer, somebody said to me, do you know what? If you fired everybody at Salesforce, it would still exist for like, you know, 10, 15 years and would operate at like 95% margin. Just get rid of every rep and this company becomes the most valuable company in the world because it's already acquired enough customers and they'll just stay around for longer and longer. And if that's the undertone attitude, you can see why everybody's saying, yeah, just let's get everybody in through the front door. And then we'll worry about unit economics later. And that's fine when you've got multiples of, you know, 25, 30%. When you haven't, we go back to, you know, the way the world was, pre-SaaS, which is you had to build a responsible business that had at least a light at the end of the tunnel to profitability. This isn't something new for me. This is just somebody going, we definitely were wearing rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah, for sure. The kind of sentiment that we're seeing is that the party is over, so to speak. I'd love to hear your experiences, Tom, as, you know, someone who's led teams through these cycles before. What are some of the kind of key learnings that you would kind of share with leaders like myself who are doing this for the first time?
When times are great, budgets are stretched because people are doing more and they'll buy lots of things and they'll be fickle and they won't necessarily adopt them. They're not necessarily on board. There's still a ton of risks in a rising market. It's not like everybody, when growth at all costs was around, was running at 170% NDR. From a pure sales standpoint, all that's happened is the qualification criteria has changed slightly. And, you know, the amount of effort you need to put into understanding and building out the potential value. You can only sell the value you create. And in a rising market, you walk into a sales call with a bag of value already. The customer's kind of, you know, feeling a little bit happy ears. So you don't have to create much more value on top of that. At the moment, when you walk into the office, you're carrying a few lead weights. There's no value in it. So you're starting off from a negative and you even have to get up to, yeah, that's actually quite a good picture or an analogy. It's like, you know, the glass was already half full previously and you just had to top it up. Yeah. A bit like an Irish coffee, bit of whiskey in the top. There you go. It's a lot better. Now we're going in there and the bucket's more than empty. So there's a resistance to even look which is, you know, getting it to zero, then there's a resistance to even buy into it because there's not enough value. So we as salespeople have got to do a better job of, one, filtering and finding businesses that have the need to change. And if you're thinking about acquisition, be more of a sniper than a carpet bomber. You've got to pick them carefully, because you will burn a bridge by being insensitive going to a business without a value proposition in this current climate. And it will be remembered as being insensitive. One of the reasons I came to Hook was, you know, looking at where we are now, I think organizations have done an atrocious job of actually spending time and valuing the relationships they've already got, that willingness and desire to really, really, truly understand their customers and what value they can provide them and how they can work with them. When I first started selling, it was, you know, here's a company car, the yellow pages, and off you go. Come back with some revenue. And it feels like with CS is exactly the same. There's no additional support. Here's your book of business, your yellow pages, that's your accounts. Here's your laptop. Make sure they all stay with us and they're happy. Now in sales, in acquisition, you've got technology for data, technology for intent, technology for engagement, technology for coaching, technology for forecasting, technology for opportunity management and progression, technology for onboarding, technology for enablement and content delivery. So you've got all of this stack, and then you've got data analysts, you've got SDRs doing the pipeline building, you've got different grades of AEs for different markets, you've got pre-sales people, you've got people who write tenders, you've got value consultants. These are all part of the sales team. Predictable revenue, Aaron Ross. If you're spending 30% of your time doing anything other than selling, you need to specialize. And the SDR was born. In CS, if you're spending more than 30% of your time doing something other than driving value, is it getting the renewal? Is it getting an expansion? Whatever. But guaranteed, they're split seven ways from Sunday. At what point is somebody going to put the same kind of resource specialization into the post-sales world than they do into the pre-sales world? And when are they going to realize that a workflow single product like Siebel was back in 2000 is not the answer? And actually, there is a plethora of capabilities required to drive phenomenal revenue and retention. And I'm really excited to see how, with this pressure we've got, how the same level of ingenuity to the acquisition side is going to be put on that side.
Super, super interesting. So I guess at a kind of macro level, in terms of just guidance that you give, it sounds like being really laser focused and that kind of sniper mentality around your messaging and your value proposition and your ICP, making sure you're targeting the right people. But then also what I heard from you there, Tom, is the importance of doing good discovery to make sure that you're not going with that kind of carpet bombing approach. You're working the right opportunities with the prospects that you can solve problems for, right? I love how you then drilled down into the kind of more of the kind of industry assessment of where we are today. And I think that's really interesting analogy, how obviously, you know, we're coming out of 5 to 10 years of the predictable revenue era for kind of pre-sales and acquisition. And I think you're quite right. I mean, as you were talking through the kind of CS representatives being pulled in seven different dimensions, I can kind of totally relate to that, both here at UHubs and how our head of CS definitely feels, as well as many of the organizations that we're working with. Something I couldn't help think about in discussion there, Tom, is I ran a webinar this week. One of the questions I had from the audience was around, how do you think about the setup of a CS team and getting that balance right between expansion versus focusing them on renewal?
Yeah, interesting. So, you know, I have a few headlines and then we'll unpack it. So one is an expanding customer renews. That helps. It's very rare that somebody who's just expanded doesn't renew. Number two is, I've never closed a deal in my entire life. Customers have bought from me. I cannot remember ever asking somebody for a piece of business. I've asked them, are they ready to make a decision? Have I created an environment where they can make a positive decision in respect to the product or service that I'm selling? Having created enough value and urgency and helped them to understand that working with me and the company I'm with makes good sense. So I would say I've not been a farmer or a hunter. I've been a buying facilitator. And given how much we know about prospects versus how much we should know about customers, I'm very nervous about ever having this kind of, you know, gun-holding hunter mentality. What we should be doing is creating an environment where our customers want to move to the next step in the journey. Now, The third point is, apart from a few notable exceptions, universally, and somebody made this comment the other day, sales enablement is quite the industry these days. Customer success enablement is as rare as, you know, a four-legged bus. Yeah, it's just not around. And certainly enablement around, you know, value discovery, change management. And the picture I'd give you is, if the customer is a sheep, CS can often be the sheepdog, where they should be the shepherd. It's very subtle, but when you're the shepherd, you create an environment where things happen. You're not running around enjoying yourself and having a whale of a time. I've never seen a sheepdog not wag its tail. But the miles and the effort that they cover to get somebody to the point where they need to get to at the end is that's not tenable.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I think the biggest excitement from my perspective, Tom, is how far we've got to go. You know, it feels like we've barely scratched the surface, even from a sales perspective. But as you mentioned, CS, even less so. It just feels like there's so much opportunity. You look at the level of detail that a high-performing sports team has and the kind of breadth of data that they're using to optimize performance and help their players realize their potential. I think you contrast that with most business organizations, and we're so far behind.
Yeah, I would challenge any CEO listening to this, have somebody do the analysis in the business and find out the mean penetration of all the customers in your portfolio and compare what the number for optimal penetration looks like versus the acquisition number that you could get to in your wildest dreams. And I guarantee the acquisition number is 20% of what the total penetration number would be. And then you think, why have I continued to look behind this door for my success?
Yeah. Just to be clear, that's penetration in terms of number of users, right?
Yeah. Or model, you know, I take an average customer and how much of its potential have I gathered? Mm. So here's what happens today. Because sales reps are driven on revenue, they tend to acquire between 17 and 23% of the lifetime value of a customer in the first transaction, which I need to finish off some analysis, but I think it's between 2.5 and 4 times too much. My view is 7% is the golden number. If you can acquire 7% in the initial transaction, a number of things will happen. I did a little bit of a post the other day about this, which said the best way to improve NDR is to lower ARR. And this is kind of where it was coming from. So start smaller, you'll naturally improve NDR. You will improve the time to first expansion because they'll be ready for the next thing quicker. You'll get them into a buying motion. I then got very troubled with myself when I looked at this and I thought, wow, if we're only selling 7% of the lifetime value, there's a huge risk, which I didn't pick up on, which is you have to sell at a value that is impactful to the person that you're selling to. So if we are selling 2,000 person SaaS companies and we want to sell to CROs, chances are they're $150 million business. They've probably got a $20 million number they're going after next year. To get their time and attention to look at something that's relevant to them, it's got to be at least 150, maybe 200K deal, because otherwise they're going to delegate it to the level that makes those decisions. So there was my contention was, I want to sell 7% of the lifetime value, but I have to sell at a value that maintains the interest of the person who's most important to me to get the deal over the line. But what that does mean is if it's more than 7%, sell at the minimum that keeps them interested. Don't suddenly say, well, I think I can get 350K out of this CRO, because then you've literally given your CS team a huge weight to carry over the finishing line and your engineering, you know, kind of failure.
I can't help but think about this also has impacts on the incentives for your acquisition guys, right? And a knock-on impact on commission structures. Because I guess as salespeople, we're naturally wired to try to maximize deal size.
Yeah. So, well, that's because compensation drives behavior. So imagine a scenario where we've now got the data on the post-sales side and we actually have an inherent understanding of what our deep ICP is. Not just what industry they're in and, you know, do they have X? It's probably got 20 different things on it. And we know what the best initial penetration rate is. So then we can calculate what the initial best deal size is. And we know who the best personas are to have involved in the sales process that drives expansions and renewals. When I was paying a sales rep for a deal, I'd pay them for every dollar and then for every tick in the box they have on this deep ICP and deal size and personas and everything else, I'd pay them an accelerator on that. because that's high fit business. I would then go and pay them again at the time of first expansion. So we will know that the natural time for first expansion is maybe 9 months. If it can happen in 9 months, we'll pay them an amount of money. If you can get it done in 6 months, we'll pay you a little bit more. Yeah. And then penetration at 12 months is another kicker. There's another thing I'm playing around with, which is SDRs should do the first deal. And the sales reps of today should actually be the lifetime value account managers and measure very differently. Because if you're going to make the initial deal smaller, it's more the emotional sell is the vast majority of the deal, not the rational purchase, because it's easier and quicker to make the rational purchase on a smaller deal. The experts in the emotional sell are SDRs. And with all the tooling they have in place, they're a smidge away from being able to do it.
That's super fascinating. I can't help but think it reminds me a lot of many product-led growth companies that we're working with, Tom, where, you know, they won't necessarily have SDRs, but they'll obviously have a low-value, high-emotion purchase initially, which will be often for free with a kind of minimum upsell. And then the sales team are more kind of almost customer success-focused with this kind of sales-assisted approach.
Yes, although every product can't be virally adopted and the value understood. But I 100% believe from a unit economics and sales gross margin standpoint, too many companies have too many people being paid commission. I mean, we did a great job of splitting up marketing, sales and service, and we've now gone lead to revenue, revenue to renewal. Well, how about if you went from lead and then you just had revenue renewal as one piece? Again, the pressure that we've got in the industry, as we did when COVID came in, innovation stepped up. Things will happen as a result of the pressure we're putting everybody under at the moment.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. You know, I feel it when our backs are up against the wall. Don't waste a good old crisis, as they say, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Tom, this conversation has been awesome. And just before we wrap up, I wanted to go back to one point that you spoke about earlier, which I think is just such a great learning to share with many of the listeners we have on this show, you know, who are early in their leadership career or still, you know, individual contributors, you know, aspiring to move into leadership positions. You spoke about getting an understanding of the right deal size and sales cycle length for you as an individual. I'd love to kind of go a bit deeper into that and hear your thoughts about how did you kind of process that and how did you learn about what your best fit deal size and sales cycle length was?
It was about 10 years after I stopped selling that I worked it out. Mine, by the way, is 6 to 9 month sales cycle, no more than $750,000. Has to be a product that I'm selling that doesn't have a budget in the organization, and it needs to be an education-based sell. And it needs to have a compelling ROI that should be discovered. And in that environment, I excel. Just so happens I excel. When it's, you know, multi-year deals, you know, I just didn't get enough of the winning feeling. You know, people would leave the business. It required a lot more rapport. I'm not a particularly social seller in the sense, you know, going to dinner and wining and dining. I've never booked a table at the Six Nations and taken customers, you know, but I know some people do that and they do it really well, but they would be better aligned to different types of deals, different types of relationships. And I think this is about recognizing that sales is like athletics. Just because I can throw the javelin doesn't mean I can do the 1500 meters. But we're all great at athletics. So as sales reps, work out where you're going to be awesome. I interviewed somebody just the other day and I said to them, I said, look, I was giving them coaching on which companies to go and interview with. You're not going to earn the money you want here because you're genetically engineered for a different type of deal. You could see that suddenly click in their minds. They're like, geez, I've been literally interviewing at the wrong companies and starting to second guess whether I'm actually any good. I'm like, you'll be freaking awesome, frankly, but you need to put yourself in an environment where you can be successful.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. Super, super interesting. Very thought provoking. And I'm sure all the listeners now are probably reviewing their best deals, reviewing the kind of highlights of their careers.
Yeah, I had there was a rep at Outreach, and I can't remember her name. She's absolute inspiration, who was in the SMB team, actually in the micro team. So selling to, you know, businesses of 25, 30 people, would do like 15 calls a day, was in the top three earners every year, went to President's Club like clockwork, you know, 6 years on the trot. And, you know, we were desperate to promote her, you know, up into corporate and enterprise. And, you know, I loved her attitude. Why the hell would I do that? I'm awesome at selling to these businesses. And guess what? And I'm not even on autopilot. I'm still getting better. You know, I have very few one call closes. When I get one, I know I've nailed it. You know, still like a three call close. And she was knocking the edges off. I love spending time with salespeople who want to be the best salesperson they want to be, rather than rush to the, you know, to leadership or something else and say, do you know what? No, I'm carving out a craft here.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, the more expert you get at something and the more refined you get to it, the higher premium you can charge. There's a rep I worked with previously, Martin, who I would recommend to anybody to be their first rep. He's a phenomenal explorer, works out how to get to money, but is frustrated by operational restrictions and kind of, you know, following process and all the rest of it. But there's nobody better to open the can of worms. And I said to him, Martin, you need to start selling yourself as the, I'm the 18-month guy, and get equity and pay that says, I'm going to be around for 18 months and I'm gone, but you will have $1.5 million in revenue where every other rep would have given you 350K. What's that worth to you? Because I've now done it three times. And I said, people will pay you a fortune for it because he's found his niche.
Yeah, I love that. That sounds like an amazing track record that he's got. Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. I could probably continue this conversation way through to lunch. I'm sure all of the listeners tuning into this and you know, catching up on the mini clips of content across various channels like LinkedIn would love to you know, either connect with you to learn more about the team that you're building at Hook and how they can continue to learn from your wisdom and mentorship. What's the best place for them to do that, Tom?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, so Tom Castley. So you can find me on there. Constantly hiring at Hook. We've got roles open at the moment across engineering, sales, SDRs, and customer success. And yeah, if you want to reduce churn by 40%, increase expansion by 20%, and 2.5 times the books of business that your CS people can handle, we may be a solution.
Amazing. Tom, really appreciate the time and look forward to catching up soon.
Awesome. Enjoyed it.
By uncovering blind spots on performance, motivation, and skills, UHubs helps busy sales leaders at top SaaS companies to optimize their sales enablements so that they can develop reps and grow revenue. The UHubs Pulse platform visualizes each team's development needs, personalized upskilling, and provides data-driven coaching recommendations. These save sales managers 40 plus hours per quarter and help reps to ramp up 30% faster. Supercharge your sales team by booking a demo today.